So to get us started, I'm going to do a little song. So if you could repeat after me. Is it really loud or is it just me?
It's fine.
Okay. So it goes like this. Forget your perfect offering.
Forget your perfect offering.
There is a crack in everything.
There is a crack in everything.
That's how.
That's how.
The light.
The light.
Gets in.
Gets in.
That's how the light 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 gets in.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
I like it.
Yeah, that's a song I like to sing both to ground myself and to gather people together and to remind ourselves that we are on a journey. We're not expecting perfection. We're just expecting people to be here and be present as in our fullest and full and broken selves together. So my name is Claire Smith, Claire Ellen Smith, and I grew up in a small town called Acme, Washington. It's in a really rural area in northwestern Washington that has traditionally been cared for by the Nooksack tribe. It's now occupied land. White truckers, farmers, and loggers have made their home there, and that's where my family is from. I also identify as white. My ancestors came here from Ireland and Germany in the mid-late 1800s, and came here for opportunity, came here to escape famine, and over the course of generations have taken advantage of policies like the Homestead Act of 1863, and later after World War II, the GI Bill, in order to gain economic stability for themselves. And in doing so, they took advantage of these policies that favored them and assimilated into whiteness, often at the expense or by distancing themselves from more recent immigrants, from Native Americans, from African Americans, groups we now call people of color. And I claim my white identity to acknowledge that I benefit from the wealth and from the stability that they built, and that I also have these benefits that continue to go throughout my life. Are you counting for me?
No, but I could start now.
I also identify not only as a white person, but specifically as a white cisgender woman. So cisgender is a word that means that when I was born, they assigned me the sex of female, my family raised me as a girl, and I identify as a girl. The world perceives me to be a woman, and that's how I want to be perceived. So I would like people to use she, her pronouns, and treat me in a way that reflects this gender identity that I hold internally as well. And as a white woman, specifically in the social work field, this is a field I've only entered in the past 2 years, this intersection of identities of being white and being a woman is very important because the social work field has been built by white women seeking to professionalize our ministry in the world, our way of caring for communities, and to value work where we often hadn't been allowed to work outside of the home. At the same time, that field has done a lot of damage to many communities of color. There has been a lot of pain that has been perpetuated by social workers. And so that's a thing that I need to be aware of as I move forward in the world, that the way that the way that I look, the way that I show up in the world could risk perpetuating that, or could also try and change that. So that's what I bring to the space.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rediat Mulageta, and I use she, her, pronouns. And I work as the program associate for the Krista Foundation for Global Citizenship. Rediat in the Amharic language means God's blessing. My family immigrated to the United States in 1996, and we moved to Seattle, Washington, where we were supported by a community of Ethiopians in the Seattle area that helped us transition well into a culture, a system that we were unfamiliar with. And faith community has been a vital aspect of my upbringing and has continued to shape and help me discern the decisions that I make. So as I went to a private Christian school, I found that I was one of few people of color in my community, and it really helped me see ways in which my upbringing in a largely Ethiopian community in the United States differed from my friend groups that had different experiences than I had. In 2012, I was moved by my faith to participate in a volunteer program. So I moved to Houston, Texas, where I lived in a predominantly African-American community. And for the first time, I began to see that although I was perceived as and received as Black in the United States, I had a different story. I had a story that I began to have conversations with my neighbors, build deep relationships with individuals that I considered my friends and my community. I had a story that carried privilege, that I knew where I came from, I knew where my ancestors come from, and I was really grieved with this reality where the American dream looked like it was unattainable for people in the United States. So as I grew up, the narrative was if I kept my head down, if I had good grades, if I worked really, really hard, that there was something that was attainable, this American dream. I could have a house with a white picket fence. And as I sat around the table with my neighbors who were African American from the United States, I began to see that that was not necessarily true. So that has challenged me, and my faith has helped me discern the decisions that I make, where I live, what I advocate for, how I vote, and even the jobs that I take. So right now, I walk alongside young adults who are also participating in service programs and are continuing to wrestle with how does my service, my faith, and the way that I pursue justice in the world all intersect. So as I'm having these conversations, I continue to be navigated by my faith, where I see Jesus and justice are fused together, and that is the lens in which I operate by.
I'm Stacy Kitahata. I'm the director for, I almost said the wrong thing. I'm the director for partnerships with the Krista Foundation for Global Citizenship. I almost said the wrong thing because my job just title just recently changed, because Reddit joined our staff. So I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. I'm a third generation Japanese American. That means that I grew up very urban. It also means that my family experienced incarceration without due process simply because of their race and ethnicity. So that shapes my experience, what it means to be a United States citizen, what it means to be a person who claims the Christian faith and who lives that out in a Lutheran tradition. It also informs how I engage with the topics that are so current today. I live in a mixed status family. That means that there are people within my immediate and extended family who have different immigration statuses. So that means all of the policies, all of the conversations that are going on now will impact the people that I know and love who live inside my most immediate relationships. So I bring that and my experience having worked with faith communities to have these challenging conversations around difference, around dialogue. How do we build relationship? How do we exercise love? So this is our second of three sessions that we're doing. They're all standalone and they all build on each other. So those of you who were here on Monday for our first session, you heard new things about us, right? We're introducing ourselves in new ways so that you can think about that for yourself, too. How do I present in the world? How do I perceive myself? How do I communicate that? And how am I perceived, right? Because that's the beginning part of our conversation and dialogue. Yeah.
I have a question. I was here on Monday.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, why did you intentionally plan to share about yourselves today and not on Monday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was that
yes
intentional?
Yes. Partly in order to have it be a different experience for those of you, so you're not like, I already heard this, I know this part, right? And also to like expand, because today's theme, as I'm just getting to this part, is, so if you all should have a handout like this, everything is either in this handout or another one we're going to give you. Yours is prettier because it has more color. And then on the inside of that front cover, it says, oh yeah, sorry. Oh, he brought his. He was so prepared. So you see, today our theme is, I have called you by name. This is part of the theme verse for the summer, restoring us. So you heard how Claire and Rediette are sharing the story of their life, but their stories and my story, these are our story too. What does it mean to be a person of faith? What does it mean to be a resident, an alien, a citizen of the United States? How do we restory our story together? So, as it says, your own stories and experiences invite us to build cultural self-awareness. That was the invitation. Cultivate empathy and develop practical dialogue skills for intercultural relationship building. So that's what we're going to do for the rest of the next hour or so of our time together. So we'll start that. Oh, first one thing and then what I was going to say. So we both said that we are staff with the Christa Foundation for Global Citizenship. Claire is a colleague in our program and is an apprentice in our Intercultural Dialogue Facilitator Program. So she was here on teaching staff last year and practicing her skills. Here she is facilitating our sessions, and we're supporting her. And she's just begun a new job with the Kaleidoscope Institute for Competent Leadership in a Diverse Changing World. Don't worry, you don't have to write it down. It's written on the bottom of page 2 there, because a number of our materials and resources come from that organization. We could talk with her more about that afterwards, because she's an expert now.
Yes.
So, there you go. We'll have a chance now to just do a brief introduction around our circle in our small group, so we know each other's first name. Go ahead, write it down. That's not cheating. And then we'll jump right into everything that we have for the rest of our...
Then we're going to be using this way of sharing throughout the rest of our workshop together. So, as I said, it's a tool for sharing in small groups. We'll have a delegated person who shares first in response to a question or prompt. And when they finish sharing, they will invite somebody from across the circle by name to share next. That person then has three options. They can share aloud, they can pass, which means they don't share and they don't have to explain why, they just choose to pass. Or they can pass for now, which means the group will remember that they passed and come back to them after everyone has been invited. Whichever one of these three options that you choose, you then have the opportunity to invite the next person. Okay? And one more element to this is the intention is to listen deeply, and so we ask there to be no crosstalk so that you can really be engaging and listening as people are sharing. Are there any questions about the process? Yeah.
You've not spoken about a topic. Is there any particular topic that we're sharing?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so we are going to practice.
Yes, and we're only here for 5 minutes. Okay, right.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a warm-up practice. So when you came in, most of you answered the questions, what is your name, what is one value that you would like to pass on to future generations, and what is one value you would not like to pass on, okay? So that's the topic that we're going to be sharing on, is introducing yourself using those questions, okay? And we only have 5 minutes, so no elaboration, please, okay? Great.
That's me doing my, you want to do the good stuff, so really take my word for it. If you try and do 5 minutes, you'll appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay, so I think the question...
So, how was that? How was the experience of sharing by mutual invitation?
Yeah, you've done it a couple times. What did you like about it?
I like that we each get to invite somebody or have somebody invite us. That's a mutual process.
Yeah. It's not often that we get invited or have that opportunity to invite other people. Right? It's a good practice for us.
It is.
Mm-hmm. What else?
I love what I didn't realize, but you mentioned last time, is that it prevents you from having that build up where you're sitting thinking about what you're going to say while they're going around the circle when it's coming to you, because it's just going to randomly happen. You don't know what it's
going to be. Yeah, so it might invite you into deeper listening.
Listening.
If you're able to be with the person and not waiting, looking, and anticipating.
I find it very distracting.
You find the process distracting?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Too many things to have to think about. I guess the older, it's probably harder for someone my age than if I were 21 instead of 71, but it, you know, remembering names, remember who has talked and who hasn't talked. Too much to have.
Yeah, and, well, and with new processes too, right? Like this is a new muscle for many of us that we haven't had to practice listening or sharing or engaging in a group in this way. So there can be some clunkiness and some. I heard you say that it was distracting for you as you're trying to remember all the rules.
Yes, exactly.
And that's it was distracting for me too at first, even as a 21-year-old. To be honest, it felt very unnatural, I thought, to me, and through practice, I have found it to become more and more natural, and sometimes I crave it even.
One thing that helps me to keep track of who has been invited and who has not yet been invited is to turn that question into, whose story haven't I heard? Whose story haven't I heard? Another way is to write everyone's name down and put a check mark. Right? I mean, I totally understand having to have systems for us and to do that. And you could also just ask the group, right? Like, I'm sorry, I lost track. Who hasn't been invited yet? Right? And then I think that that's part of the reason for doing it, is that we get, like, that was okay. No one's judging me, right? About
so that I guess part of it is it's embarrassing for me to not remember who, like, I call on somebody
And
that person is thinking, well,
how come you didn't remember me?
Or something, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now your group can hold that with you and encourage you and be supportive of you in that way.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I didn't find it cut down my apprehension about being ready to speak, but I thought it was a more fun process knowing that I was going to be invited.
So you can kind of rest in that knowledge.
Yeah.
How was it to share about yourself with these questions in this new group? What came up for you around the kind of the content of what you were sharing?
Anything you noticed about what it would the process of coming up with the responses?
I know what I should have said.
Why do you say it that way, Dave?
Holding grudges. Oh.
God.
That is a hard one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like for me it's sometimes hard to pick the right thing to share. It's like, oh, I have like 30 seconds to like put my whole life on this. This is it. This is my family.
All of our perceptions of your entire family history will go in these 4 weeks.
Exactly.
There is that sense of wanting to get it right.
Yeah.
Performance or whatever that is, in a group setting. Whatever you did is what you did, it's great.
Exactly. So it's there was a lot of critical, judging, things that we wanted to let go in our circle. And I think to name those out loud and to say, I have those on myself, right? Not only do I carry them, and apply them to each of you in the room that I need to distinguish and extinguish in myself, but also that I do it to myself. And I think like there is a right answer where this is a way of sharing. It's a way of managing those differences in communication styles. So that those of us who can't wait to tell a really super long story actually need to write down just a few words. And those of us who are like, oh my gosh, this is so serious. Like, okay, I'm going to put down one word and at least then I'll have gotten it out of my mind.
Before I forget, I wanted to thank the three of you for sharing about yourselves. You shared really
We practice.
Really important information. Yeah. I mean, in my mind,
Prowess
says a lot about each of you, about what you had to say in a very short period of time.
Well, so we're going to get to the opportunity for each of you to discern your own level of sharing as an opportunity, not just to inform us, not for that purpose at all, but for you to be able to explore your own story.
Exactly. Just before we get to that, we have kind of one more framework to introduce us into our later activities.
So we did address this in our first session, and there's a reason that we're doing these same things again, because these are foundational to what it is to know ourselves really well, to be able to share our story. These are foundational to intercultural relationship building. And so recognizing that intercultural capacity is not just what we know in our mind, the information, the books that we've read, and the research that we've done, and the YouTube videos that we've watched. Anyway, if you don't know what that is, we can talk later. But it's also how we prepare our hearts to be vulnerable in a group of strangers, to what level, right? What is our attitude of curiosity? That's going to help us in a group in sharing, to assume positive motivation. So on Monday, I made reference to the sermon that was delivered on Sunday, and I spoke of it affirmatively. And later, someone brought to my attention that not everyone received it that way. Some people felt criticized by it. Some people felt it was too political to be spoken of. And I thought, oh, I was not being conscious enough of how other people might perceive it, right? And if I were to be in a conversation with that person, I would want to have a posture of curiosity, right? Tell me more about how you felt criticized by that, right? Rather than to say, are you kidding? It was so awesome, right? And to give more of myself, but to actually say, how do I build a relationship? How do I exercise curiosity in a sincere fashion? So how do I shape a heart set of relationship? And that is a skill set, right? That is a practice. Figuring out, like, I would have to think, what is the way to ask a question in a way that's not defensive or judgy or criticizing? That's a practice of empathy. So today, we're going to be exploring, how do I tell and embrace my own story? How do I receive and celebrate another person's story? So, there's some people who have done this activity before, but what would you say is we've been talking about intercultural capacity. What is a definition of culture? What are the features of culture? Yeah?
Things that you've been taught.
Taught.
That are important to your lifestyle.
Okay. Other folks?
Traditions.
Traditions. Great.
Food.
Food? Yeah.
Religion and culture are interactive.
Okay. Religion and culture are interactive.
Assumptions.
Assumptions? Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Mores and values.
Mores and values. Yeah. Good. You knew that was a winning response from last time. So, in fact, we will reveal here some of the things. Yeah?
I take this off. This is from yesterday.
Yeah? So, or Monday. Some
yes,
of the things.
Monday.
Yeah. And so, what? We didn't have a slide for it on Monday. See,
no,
we get new things. Is that culture is, and this is an official definition, or one that's used within the practice and the literature of intercultural studies. The learned and shared values, beliefs, and behaviors, right, heart set, mindset, skill set, of a group of interacting people. So that means we are constantly, as humans, creating and building culture. Right? So you can see that religion, for example, is one of those ways. It's a system of practices, it teaches values, and it sets a mindset. Right? So these are all different ways that we participate and build culture together. So, one of the ways that we have to think about this is, oh, oops, we were supposed to delete that.
Okay.
is this picture that we have now as a separate handout for you for today. Okay. I know, it went deep into that pocket. Okay. So here's a way of unpacking all these many, many, many things that are part of our culture.
right? Mm-hmm. So here's a way of imaging it. These are not, this is not exhaustive, so if things are coming to your mind about this is also part of my culture, then please name it out. So at the center of each of us is our personality, that unique way that we are, right? The quirky ways that you're distinct from any siblings you might have or that sort of thing. At the next level of who we are, these internal dimensions of our culture that shape our culture, our values, our mores, etc., are our age. What is the age, the generation that we're born into? Our race, the race that we are assigned, because race is a social construct, but we are assigned a race by society. Our ethnicity, I said that I was a Japanese American. That's different than being a Korean American or a Chinese American, right? Or an African American, even though we are people of color, even though all of us Asians are considered one race. Physical ability, sexual orientation, gender identity, which is what Claire referred to. And these internal dimensions are considered internal dimensions because they're things that are not so much up to our choice or things like, oh, okay, right, that don't necessarily change over time. Whereas the external dimensions are things that are more likely to change. Our marital status, our work experience, our educational background, our parental status, personal habits, that sort of thing. And then the final one is more professional, that we make even more choices about, right? That are up to our volition. So what are some things that are not here that are part of your own internal or external cultural dimensions? Anything that comes to mind?
I would say habits or hobbies, which connect you to other groups.
Mm-hmm. It could be that, definitely. And that would be out here, right? Habits or hobbies that connect you to different groups.
Shared experiences.
Uh-huh. Through what kind of thing?
Well, the people I played baseball with.
Okay, there you go. Sports is a really big thing, right? And that's like your baseball team had a different culture than the soccer team, or like my nephew was in lacrosse. That's a whole other culture. Yeah, great.
Retired.
So your work experience and your stage in your working life. Yeah, great.
Uh-huh. I find other fun things the same as sports. So I would say other recreational activities.
Mm-hmm. Like if you play a musical instrument, or if you're in an art group,
or
hiking culture, right, exactly.
Travel, right?
Uh-huh. So there's one here called geographic location, but that's also like those of us who are from the West, the Midwest, the East, the South, you really realize that there's very different values and attitudes that come with that.
Political
affiliation, absolutely.
Yes.
That's there too, as well as things like birth order, right? Those kinds of things. All right, so when you think about these things, all these different characteristics and the ones that you just named, what are three that are particularly influential for you today? Things that really, really shape and influence and inform who you are. And Claire and Reddy are going to real quickly give us examples from themselves.
Yes. So for me, today particularly, race is an important one. I feel like in the United States, as a white person, race is always going to be one that I need to be mindful of and is important, even when it's invisible to me. I also, for me, in Holden Village, religion is an important one because I grew up Lutheran. This is a very familiar place to me in that. And so that's a part of my identity that is very evident to me when I come here. And educational background, because it's recently changed for me. I just graduated and got my master's degree. And so that's a part of like being a part of this culture of people who have gone to graduate school is a thing that I'm just figuring out what that means for me.
Right, so the three, ethnicity, I shared about being Ethiopian American. In the last 5 years, have been exploring a lot of what that means, claiming my identity as an Ethiopian American woman in America. And then My work experience is also shaped by my faith and my commitment to faith and service and just really choosing and being active in the spaces that allow me to practice that as well. And then marital status. I am currently engaged and about to marry an individual who is not Ethiopian, and so I've been really thinking about what does that look like for me as I'm about to share my life with this person, but then also what does that mean as I have explored what it means to be single and claiming that and celebrating that, but then to also shift into being in union with someone else. So
while all of these things are part of all of us all of the time, there are certain aspects that are more salient, if you will, at given times. So if you all mark three, we'll have until 11:30, that's like 7 minutes to share. I know, because we have something that we really, really want to get to. And if you wouldn't mind staying a couple minutes longer, that'll make it even better. But
okay. So we have the person who shared last in my first.
Yeah. So did you hear that? The person who shared into the group, the final person, so in our group, that would be Connie, gets to invite someone to start the next round because she hadn't gotten a chance to invite. So take until 11:30, and then we'll call you back. How was that? I know. I really appreciate my group. Thanks, everybody, for being very forthcoming and efficient. You did. You were very vulnerable and self-revealing in a very brief amount of time. You're next, right? You're going to say a little bit more? We're going to introduce really briefly what's on the other side of your paper, and then we have a guided meditation that Claire will lead us through.
Right. So we've been talking about culture, right? There are these things that are learned, things that are patterned or shared, and we offer to you this analogy of culture as an iceberg. So what is true of icebergs? What do you know about them?
They're bigger underwater.
Exactly. Yes.
They're disappearing.
Yeah.
the analogy kind of breaks down a little bit. So in our brainstorm, we had some examples around food, right? Some habits, some of these modes of communication. These are things that would be considered up here in the top part of the iceberg. These also known as external cultures. These are things that you can see, hear, touch, right? These are things that are more explicitly learned. Someone perhaps taught you, this is the way to do things, this is the way that we do things, maybe. They're also a little more easily changed. So I grew up coming to Holden as a kid. This was kind of one of my main church communities. And so I learned that you go to church in the BC and you can wear shoes, like flip-flops or no shoes, cut-off shorts. You don't have to, like, dress a certain way to go to church. And I remember going to some other people's churches and showing up in that outfit and being like, oh, this is wrong, right? Like, this is not the appropriate way to show up in this church setting. And then I was able to go home, change, and then the next week go back in a more appropriate cultural outfit for that setting. They're also conscious, so you can more easily kind of describe and name them like I've just done with some awareness, but perhaps a little bit less intensive work. But then underneath the surface, we have the larger part of the iceberg. And these are our beliefs and values, which you can maybe see from the surface. You might have to just kind of pay a little bit more of attention down there, looking underneath the water. These might be things like, what is considered food? What is a good leader like? What is a good education system? What does that mean? What are gender norms? These are sort of beliefs and values that are more implicitly learned, and they're a little more complicated, and they get ingrained in us, or maybe a little hard to just describe, right? They're also patterns, which, again, are implicitly learned and less easily changed. So for me, one of the patterns that I observed in my family was that you always had to ask. It was kind of a big ordeal when someone else wanted to join a family activity, whether that was a vacation or a meal or something. In high school, I invited a friend over once, and there was kind of this tension. And there wasn't anything explicit about it. My parents never said, yeah, that was bad that you did that. And they were very nice to my friend, but I can tell my family has this pattern of having a kind of more closed, private family space.
And then below that, upholding all of these things are myths, which are the stories that we tell that kind of uphold and support all the other cultural things above it. So for my personal family, I've been told this story a lot. When I first met my cousin, I held her in my arms, and the first thing I said was, "She's so cute and helpless." And that story got told over and over and over again and sort of became part of the dynamic between my cousin and I until really recently when we were able as adults to kind of unpack that myth and do the exploration and be like, whoa, is this actually how we want to relate or do we want to change things up, right? So that's an example of a myth. And if for those of you who were here on Sunday, that statement of how you describe God shapes who you become, right? That's part of what this underlying part of the iceberg. That's why that's important to explore, is it shapes who you become. So as we're moving about the world, we're floating around in our icebergs, and other people have their icebergs, and sometimes they bump into each other, right? That's natural. It happens. And it's an opportunity, actually, to explore some of that. What is that that's bumping underneath the water? It's natural, and it's how we learn. It's an opportunity for us to learn more about ourselves, to kind of lean into that discomfort on that growing edge. When we do understand, and when we've been doing this practice of understanding our cultural icebergs, we can grow. Both we and the people that we interact with can grow in our icebergs and in our cultural awareness. How we manage our bumping is intercultural competence. So that's what we have been talking about and framing this whole session. Oh. And in addition to personal icebergs, the examples
that's
that
nice.
I gave.
That's nice. This was the summary of the individual part.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. So the first step in becoming interculturally aware is knowing your own iceberg, including your internal culture. So in addition to our personal and individual icebergs, every organization also has icebergs.
Yeah, as a culture. Every collection of people has an iceberg, right?
Right. So I've been talking about my family examples, but Holden Village has an iceberg, churches have an iceberg, your workplace has an iceberg, the United States has an iceberg.
Of culture.
Right. And these larger groups have bigger myths, right? So Rediette was referencing the American Dream in her introduction. That is one of those kind of myths down at the bottom of the American iceberg, right? Or as we're heading into the 4th of July, the story that goes along with that. In this Lutheran setting, the story of the Reformation and of Martin Luther, and kind of the way that we speak about that informs all these other things up above our cultural icebergs. And so I kind of jumped ahead. I'm sorry, I'm a little uncomfortable with the slides still. But
back up and do it again.
Shall I? Ready? So one of the risks of not knowing your cultural iceberg is cultural imperialism, where someone or a group of people comes in with their culture and their beliefs and values and stories, and they run into another group and they say, "That's wrong, this is right," or "This is like the way to be," and there nothing else exists. And then you risk smashing cultural icebergs. And we have examples of this in history. The boarding schools that were built to assimilate Native American children. Right? That's an example of this. Slavery is an example of this. All the pieces that went into that system. Missionaries perhaps going into other places and not being aware of the cultural values that they're bringing with them and breaking apart communities. Those are all violences and cultural imperialism. Is there a slide for the reclaiming?
No.
Okay. So but hope not all is lost. There are a lot of examples of groups of people who are reclaiming their cultural icebergs, right? So Black Lives Matter movement is an example of that. Or later this summer, I'm going to a week-long powwow with a bunch of friends, and that like those examples of the Crow tribe having a long time to reaffirm their culture with each other, those are examples of ways to reclaim cultural icebergs. So in organizational or larger group setting, the first step towards constructive and profound adaptive organizational change is for members to know the organization's cultural iceberg. So it works on all levels, right? From the very, very micro to the very, very large and global scale. especially the parts below the water. Anything to add? Any questions?
I think we should negotiate for time.
Okay. Great. Because we need half an hour, huh?
Well, there's about the 5 minutes for the guided meditation, and then we want to have an opportunity for you all to share in your small groups, and for everyone to get enough time to do that. I think it would need at least 20 minutes, so that's 25 minutes from now. Are people okay with that? If you have to leave right at noon, then of course you have to leave. So, anybody have to leave right at noon so that we know? Okay. It's totally okay. It was our responsibility to help you manage this time. So, all right, it's okay. So,
okay.
If everyone else can stay even just a little bit to make sure that everyone gets a chair and everyone gets to hear each other.
So. Okay, great. So the next activity we have is an opportunity for us to dive deeper into these cultural icebergs that we bring with us to explore our internal cultures. So you're getting passed around a piece of paper.
This is scratch.
And I'll be guiding us in a little meditation. You have the paper. If you'd like to draw pictures as we walk through this, that's what that's for, or you need to take notes. I'll be asking everyone to recall a typical meal when you're between 10 and 12 years old. And just a note that there are going to be a little bit of guided visualization and reflection, and to recognize that people are bringing different things with them, and to only go as deep into this activity as feels productive and safe for you. So, you know, I trust each of you to take care of yourselves. If you're getting to a place that doesn't feel like a growing edge, it starts to feel dangerous, you're welcome to just pay attention to your breath, you're welcome to draw, to doodle something else, or to just kind of back up and think about some things that are a little bit safer for you, okay? So, if you could, feel the weight of your feet on the floor, or get into a comfortable position where you're feeling grounded. Maybe take a moment, you might want to close your eyes, or just look downwards, or soften your gaze. Maybe paying attention to your breath. And recall a typical meal, when you were 10 to 12 years old. Where are you? What do your surroundings look like? What sounds and smells are around you? Who's there? Who's not there? What are you doing? And as I'm prompting with these questions, feel free to draw representations of this typical meal for yourself, if that's helpful to you. So where are people positioned? What are they doing? Who's preparing the food? What kind of food are you eating? What else is happening? What conversations are taking place? People have specific spots, specific roles perhaps related to food preparation or cleanup. What are some of the feelings surrounding the space? Who's talking and what are they talking about? Who's not talking? What's not being said? Are there ever any guests? If so, what changes? What happens to you? So now as you're in this space, start to go a little bit deeper and start to notice what you're learning here. What did you learn about gender roles? What did you learn about power and authority? What did you learn about hospitality? What other values and beliefs are being communicated here? And now coming back to the present moment, how are these values, beliefs, and patterns still impacting you and influencing you today? This is the question that we're going to be sharing out with each other. How are the values, attitudes, and assumptions that you learned from this meal experience still influencing you today? If your eyes are closed, I invite you to open them. If you'd like to make a few notes or finish up your drawing. So now in our small groups, we're going to be sharing on this last part of the experience of how the values, attitudes, and assumptions related to this meal experience are still influencing you today. We're going to share in our small groups using mutual invitation, remembering you can share, you can pass, or you can pass for now. And just for time, I'd say we have about 3 minutes per person. So do be mindful of that as we share.